The Just Transition Collaborative we formed with the intent of really looking at how we can ensure that our transition to a renewable energy economy and off of fossil fuels is addressing the concerns of those that are most directly impacted by a changing climate and by the shift to this new green economy. And so, for example, we can look at, if Boulder is moving towards addressing climate change and shifting to renewable energy, does public money, is that going to support low-income households that would like to see the benefits of cheaper electricity? Subsidies support just kind of private homes for on roof solar, or do we see low income housing have opportunities to have access to solar? If we're going to see green jobs that are created, are these going to be living wage jobs, and are they going to be accessible to all groups, and particularly underrepresented groups and racial minorities? And if we're having planning processes around Boulder's climate plan, are these planning processes really inclusive of all groups, and particularly groups that in this current national political context are feeling threatened or excluded?
Do you think that there has been an absence thus far in, say, the main environmental discussions that are happening around climate change and how communities like Boulder and Denver can deal with it, that there's been an absence of the discussion on social and economic justice as part of that? I mean, do you think there's just been an assumption that as we all move towards a greener future, everyone is going to be impacted or will reap the same benefits in the same way?
Well, I think that in the national environmental movement, historically, there has been a lack of focus on issues that directly impact communities of color and low-income communities. There's been a focus on kind of the environment as wilderness and not always on the environment as where we live, work, play, and pray. This is kind of the foundation of the environmental justice movement, to look at the environment and where we are. And the data shows over the years that it is communities of color and it's low-income communities and it's other marginalized communities that bear disproportionate burden to the impacts of environmental problems, of power plants, and of a changing climate. The term just transition is something that we didn't come up with. This is something that's been part of the environmental justice movement for a long time. And there's a group called the Just Transition Alliance that was one of the kind of founders of bringing this idea, and was really working with community groups that were working for environmental justice and partnering with labor and looking at what is a transition pathway for those workers that are currently within the fossil fuel industry and related businesses. Is there a pathway that when those jobs are displaced by this new economy, is there job training? Are there new job opportunities? And are these jobs good jobs? Are they actually jobs with good wages and that are good for these communities? I think there is certainly around the country and around the world many movements that are pushing to try to see climate change and shift towards renewable energy as an opportunity to not only rethink kind of energy systems, but to rethink how we interact with each other and the ways, and specifically to rethink our relationships of inequality and oppression, and this being a huge opportunity. So we're working, starting locally, really in Boulder, and trying to work with the city and work with community-based organizations, and trying to really find a pathway that those that are marginalized within Boulder can really be part of this new economy.
We'll talk about some of those measures and what really can be done to make sure it is an inclusive future for everyone if we are moving towards that greener future. But just to get back to that issue of what's happening with environmental stewardship, and particularly leadership of those major national organizations that really do seem to have the nation's attention when we come to environmental issues. And you said there has been a focus on conservation and not necessarily on some of the human impact of environmental issues. Is that because the leadership in those groups, is it a culture of kind of white male privilege? I mean, why are we seeing that kind of disconnect?
I think there's really three factors that are playing into this. And there's a term called the green ceiling, and that speaks to the fact that in both environmental organizations and also in environmental agency, that individuals of color are underrepresented, and also women underrepresented in those organizations related to the environment. And I think that has to do with, one, is a legacy, a history of excluding the concerns of communities of color and low-income communities in favor of defining the environment as something that's out there instead of here. I think that also there is our cultures of exclusion in terms. I think that organizations are reproduce white culture and male culture within organizations. And there's been efforts in some major environmental organizations to really start to address these things. I know the Rainforest Action Network is one group that has is proactively trying to deal with these cultures. And I think also we need to look at the kind of feeding grounds the pathways by which people move into these jobs. And environmental studies programs around the country, I work in an environmental studies program, and I think that there's certain culture and certain ideas that environmental studies programs tend to focus on, and they're not always representative of all groups and particularly more marginalized groups in our society. So I think really seeing a shift in how we go about addressing environmental problems means really addressing the leadership within environmental organizations, and that takes change at various levels.
We're always talking about how those who are most impacted by a changing climate are the ones who are least vocal or have the least representation, maybe mm-hmm. at the decision-making process. Could you give us some examples locally, either in Boulder County or Colorado, or even just, you know, in the Western US, of how some groups how they're most impacted, disproportionately impacted mm-hmm. by climate change and environmental degradation?
Sure. So some of my work is also international, so I can start just kind of a big picture global view. If we look at the least developed countries in the world, there's the least developed countries are the 49 poorest countries in the world. And if you live in one of those countries, you are five times more likely to die from a climate-related disaster. And the same is true in the United States, where we see when we see disasters like Hurricane Katrina, like Hurricane Sandy, when we see these disasters hit, it's those that that generally contribute the least to the problem, that in terms of greenhouse gas emissions and high consumption lifestyles of creating this problem, that are on the front lines of feeling the impacts first and worst. So this looks like losing housing. So there's a term called climate gentrification, which speaks to the fact that sometimes where we see floods that kind of wash out housing, and we can think of kind of
Lions.
Louisiana. What's that?
We can think of Lyons in the 2013 flood,
exactly.
Or Longmont, where entire mobile home parks completely wiped away and not yet replaced, if ever to be replaced.
And so this is a major concern nationally, where we see low-income housing that becomes is often because of the history of low-income housing and where it's often put, are lands that tend to be more vulnerable to events such as floods. And once those housing projects are wiped out, we need concerted efforts to see investment to rebuild housing in places that aren't prone to disasters and for vulnerable people. There's a trend of those pieces of land being replaced and gentrified in order to and kind of serving needs that aren't the needs of those that are most impacted. So we see people being displaced. We see homelessness that's being generated around the world. We see loss of livelihood is a big trend in terms of being able to meet basic needs. And we also see that this is really costly, right? That dealing with climate change is not something that is some elitist environmentalist idea, but it's something that's costing cities billions of dollars a year around the country, and that we're seeing increasing levels of disasters. And we're also seeing a lot of need for federal funding and for federal funding in a lot of places that resist the idea of federal intervention. But those are places where we do see a lot of need for recovery from the disasters where they're hitting.
Well, the city of Boulder is set to vote on its climate action plan. And I know the Just Transition Collaborative has really been paying attention and actually working with the city in terms of having that type of inclusivity on environmental and social justice. So what might we see now, and how can social and environmental justice be part of a climate action plan in a city like Boulder?
We feel very excited because we've been working since the summer of organizing several community events with other groups in order to get input from diverse constituents within Boulder County and also social justice leaders on what really would a socially just climate plan look like and what are the types of measures that would be included. And we feel excited that the current plan, which will has three resolutions that will be voted on this Tuesday evening, that plan includes a just transition framework and objectives in three main areas that I think are a major first step in towards moving us towards addressing climate change and a renewable energy transition in a way that's socially just. And that includes a real focus on inclusive policy processes and building leadership among underrepresented groups. That includes a focus on socially just green jobs and trying to build a green economy that is inclusive and that does have living wage jobs. And that also includes ensuring that that energy prices don't create a disproportionate burden for low-income households and communities of color, and that the benefits of renewable energy and moving towards a renewable energy economy, that those benefits are also and those opportunities are really shared broadly and particularly among those individuals and groups that have the most at stake in this transition.
Beyond what's happening at City Council on Tuesday with the Climate Action Plan, what is the future for the Just Transition Collaborative, and how can you move this conversation forward?
Sure. So we are focused, the first part of the plan focuses on energy, and we are now looking at how we can support the city in starting to move forward and measure some of the goals and objectives that the city is committing to. And this will involve really trying to support some model projects. So, for example, there's a program called the FLOWS Leaders Program, and that's with the Environmental Center at CU Boulder. And that's that program is about bringing students together with primarily low-income communities within Boulder and trying to find ways to reduce energy and water costs and bills. So we are going to be working with a few other examples of that of existing just transition projects and projects that we're trying to get off the ground to really show what we mean by a just transition. So this might be a landscaping business that's trying to shift over to renewable technologies towards being all electric, and doing so while having leadership, Latina leadership, and also providing good wages for their workers. And we were also looking at the next phases of the climate plan, which will be focused on resources, and that will include waste, agriculture, and water, and really trying to look at the next phase of what are the types of concerns that might emerge when we're trying to address those three areas more sustainably. So what are the social justice opportunities and challenges that might be faced in addressing those needs?